They're right here in the studio. We're so happy that the Clearwater Hot Club is here from Grand Rapids, and they are Sam Miltich on lead guitar, Mike Miller on rhythm guitar, and Matthew Miltich on the upright bass. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We love coming here.
Yay. And I'm so glad that we were able to extend the play time a little bit here.
Indeed.
On this show. So, you know, if you're going to go to all the trouble of coming all the way over here and set up,
let's
hear from you. First of all, for folks who might not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about your band and how you got started. It's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, sure. My name is Sam Miltich. The band's name is the Clearwater Hot Club, and we play a style of music that's called Gypsy Jazz, and this music was pioneered by a legendary guitarist, Django Reinhardt, who was a Belgian-born gypsy and lived most of his life in France. And he was joined by another musician who many people might know, Stefan Grappelli, jazz violinist. And they basically, what they did was fused pre-World War II American jazz with European string music. And they were the first all-string ensemble to be playing jazz, and also not just jazz, but jazz in Europe at a time when there wasn't that many original groups in Europe playing jazz. So the timeline is the 1930s, 40s, up into the early 50s. So that's how the music was born, and our band is trying to carry on the legacy of that music that was created at that point. And there are many different bands across the world now that are playing this style of gypsy jazz music. So, and when I say gypsy jazz, I should explain that Django Reinhardt was Roma, Manouche gypsy. And really it's sort of the melding of jazz and traditional gypsy music from Europe. So that's a little description about the music, but you'll get a chance to hear it here.
That's great. And that's a lot more than I knew before, even though I've heard you guys many times.
Ask too, the gypsy part of the gypsy. I almost got from what you were describing that this all originated with Django Reinhardt, but does it come from gypsy camps? Were they playing music? Is that what he was trying to?
Yeah, I guess what you could say was that Django was from the gypsy Roma culture, and his life was growing up in a gypsy camp. A lot of the times on the outskirts of Paris, and so he grew up in a time period when there was a lot of waltz musette, which was being played. So you think of French accordion music and waltz time. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of what he played when he was young, and then of course, the typical gypsy music you think of with the Hungarian chartist, the two-beat feel, that kind of stuff. So, he cut his teeth as a young person playing that traditional music of his family. But when he was a teenager, he heard Louis Armstrong because jazz was becoming more and more popular in Europe at that point. And there was groups called hot clubs that promoted hot jazz, and hence the term hot club. And so they were bringing American jazz artists over, and this young gypsy was hearing this music and going, I think this is what really speaks to me. So I don't know if it was necessarily a conscious effort to blend gypsy music with jazz, but that's just how it happened. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the best.
And you're right. I think we'll understand more when we hear some of you. So you want to play something first, and
we're gonna
some more?
Yeah, we're going to play a tune. This is titled For Sephora, and this tune was written by a contemporary gypsy composer who comes from Holland. His name is Stokelo Rosenberg, and he's one of the greatest guitarists alive and also a wonderful composer. And this is his composition, For Sephora. And I'll just put in a little plug here. We have a new record coming out around Christmas time, and it will have this song on it. So that's rather exciting.
Good to know.
So
that is.
I have to a little prerequisite there.
More about that when you're done.
Yes.
One, two, three, four.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
So glad you guys are back.
Really nice.
Oh, we are too.
I love your music. It's awesome. Oh, thank you. That was Sam Miltich and the Clearwater Hot Club.
And thanks to Jeff and John for setting up this sound here.
Yes.
So good.
It's really nice. Our engineer, Jeff really Nemitz, and nice. John Minowski are both making this sound even better. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
So, you're playing tonight and tomorrow night at the Tavern?
Indeed, yeah. We'll be there from 8:30 to about 11:30, or as long as we decide to keep the party going.
So. All right, good.
Yeah.
That's good, a two-night gig.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we love doing that. If we're gonna come this direction, we might as well stay a while and enjoy it. So
that's right.
Dad and I are going to probably chase after some grouse in the woods tomorrow.
Oh,
so.
It's supposed to be a really nice day.
Yeah.
So. Good. They'll be out sunning themselves.
Yes, exactly.
Good.
And then we'll be eating them.
Oh well, it'll be nice last few hours for him anyway.
He seems like such a nice guy too, doesn't he? Just to look at him.
Oh, I'm very nice. I'm just hungry.
He's exactly. Very well dressed too. I tell our listeners these guys look pretty sporty here, except Matthew. He's got a white shirt on, but yeah, everybody
I'll
else
be
is
changing
got,
before I go to the.
You will. All right. So look for the guys in the black suits and the black shirts.
It'll be men in black tonight. Yeah.
That's right.
So now
it's very cool.
You came over here for a two-night gig here, and you play around Grand Rapids. Where else do you play around the Midwest generally?
Yeah, we've been kind of going a little more far afield than we have in the past few years. We do play up here on the shore quite a bit, and the Duluth area, and then we get over to Bemidji, play on the Iron Range quite a bit. But then I do some jobs out in the Twin Cities, but we've been called as far afield as Minot, North Dakota here recently. So,
wow.
Ooh. Oh, right.
So we're getting around a little bit and doing a bit more touring. And I did some tours down to southern Minnesota in the Northfield area and Winona and do some playing in northern Wisconsin. So we play around the upper Midwest, I'd say. And, we'll see where things take us.
That's great. Yeah. And, you know, when we were asking you about the history of gypsy jazz and stuff, can you talk a little bit about the history of your group? Because it's kind of an interesting story.
Certainly, yeah. When I was 13, I began playing the guitar, and it was more, not necessarily a choice, but just something that was going to happen. All of my family played music. Four of my uncles play the guitar. My dad plays the upright bass. So it was more just a way to join the circle, so to speak. And so I started doing that, and I kind of, was exploring different styles of music, and I was interested somewhat in bluegrass and some in rock and roll. And as a 13-year-old, you don't really know exactly what you're doing. But when I was 15, I heard Django Reinhardt for the first time on Woody Allen's film Sweet and Low Down, and I was just hooked. I just absolutely loved that music. I loved Django Reinhardt's playing, and Howard Alden, who did the soundtrack, was very inspirational to me. And I basically said, this is what I'm doing, and I've been doing it ever since, and I have no regrets. I absolutely love the music. It's just a joy to be able to play it, and it's a joy when I hear other people say how much they enjoy it. And that's what it's about. But when I was 15, Dad had been playing bass with his brothers, but I said, Dad, I need a bassist. And he said, well, I don't really play jazz bass. And I said, just get your bass. And I said, that doesn't matter. I don't care. I don't really play jazz guitar either. So we'll do this thing together. So from basically the time that I was 15 and until now, 15 years now, I've been, he and I have been partners in crime, so to speak.
Yeah. That is terrific.
From the time Sam picked up a guitar until he was truly playing, was about a week.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you can tell it's a pretty natural.
Yes, very much. And you look really happy when you're doing it.
I love it. I don't know if anything makes me feel more like myself than when I have a guitar in my hands or when I'm walking for birds. So
then it's going to be a good weekend.
Darn right.
Well, so, I told you guys this before, but I remember seeing it for the first time up here at, Victoria's Bakehouse, was it called?
Oh, yeah,
me too.
Yeah, many years ago.
How old were you then?
I would have been a teenager, between 16 or 18 years old.
Yeah. It was just amazing. Everybody's head was turning to this young guy there, and you sounded beautiful then, and it's only gotten better. So.
Yeah.
Well, I hope so, anyways.
And Mike, when did you join this gang?
I've been playing with these guys for probably 3.5 years, 4 years, something like that. I started out, I play the drums also with a group. So if we're doing straight ahead jazz, I play the drum set. And that's how I first got started with these guys. They I had tried out to be in a part of a horn band with them, and started on the drums, and then they caught wind that I played guitar, and I've been playing guitar with them for about 2 years now. So
okay. Now, do you ever, for some reason, I seem to remember that sometimes you are comprised as a four-piece band?
Yeah, we have, boy, we have a lot of different variations that we play with, and but we do have a fourth player that we play with. We have a violinist that sometimes joins our group. We have a different violinist that join our group. We also play with clarinet sometimes, and saxophone more in our straight-ahead jazz approach. But yeah, so we do have a violin, and that sort of lends the Stefan Grappelli sound to the outfit. Mm-hmm. But we play in a lot of different configurations. So
okay. Well, if you just joined us, we're speaking with Sam Miltich and the Clearwater Hot Club, which is Mike Miller and Matthew Miltich. In addition to Sam, they're playing tonight and tomorrow night at the Gunflint Tavern, starting at around 8:30. Would you do another one?
Of course. I've been doing all this talking about Django Reinhardt, and I think it's time to play a Django Reinhardt composition. This is one of his tour de force pieces, sort of loosely based off of the Tiger Egg, an old trad jazz tune from the 19-teens and 20s. This is titled Django's Tiger, or Tigre, depending, you know.
1, 2, I want 2, 3.
nice. Wow. Sam Miltich and the Clearwater Hot Club here on the Roadhouse. So I have to ask, because I know what appeals to me as a non-musician listener, but what appeals to you about Django Reinhardt's music the most?
You know, gosh, that's a hard thing to put into words, I guess. It's sort of the combination of one of the things I love about jazz is I love lush, big chords. That was always appealing. It, in my mind, it translates to color. So I see a lot of color inside my mind when I hear the chords. But then, you know, it's this really intensely fast-driving rhythm as well that appeals to it. And then, you know, virtuosity of any kind, you know. But I guess that said, it's also that there's a real sense of beauty in the music as well. You know, it's a very
beautiful sound.
It's happy. It's beautiful. And there's a great range. There's a really large depth to the music because it can be just sort of ecstatically happy or very, let's put it this way, romantic. And it can also be just intensely sad, you know. So it's... You know, it's a combination of a lot of things that appeals to me. So,
and it is a virtuoso playing required too.
Yes, there's quite a lot of technique that comes as a result of playing this music. So,
yeah, your fingers were really, really flying.
Yeah, they weren't flying as well as I wanted them to fly, but you know, it's early in the night.
Could have fooled us.
It's just the first two songs of the evening here. So, you know, there's a lot more to come, folks. We got three sets.
Yeah,
that means you just got to come down to the tavern. So
that's right.
So but, the other thing about it is it's this is all string music.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, there's just a different quality to string music.
Yeah.
And jazz has been associated a lot with drums and horns and so forth. Mm-hmm. But, you know, strings are another deal. Both my parents were string players. My mother played cello and my dad played the string bass. And there's just something about playing just with your hands alone on string. Mm. You think about it, it's a very ancient kind of thing. Probably, you know, some guy was out with a bow and plucked the string and it made a note,
right.
And he thought that was interesting, and then he stretched it and it made a different note, and, you know, let it go a little slack and made a different note, and then he thought, you know, if I bet if I put three more strings on this thing, right? So it's you know, it's got this sort of primitive quality to it. These instruments are just made of wood with strings on them.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's something just appealing about being able to do something with that and create this unique sound.
Yeah, it's really quite I call it charming. I find string music to be quite charming, and it's very personal to me, and it's very approachable to me. And one of the things that became clear to me when I was young was I loved string music. That's why I picked the acoustic guitar. That was the music that I was really surrounded by as a kid with my uncles playing. And at first I was, you know, I would say interested in some bluegrass guitar playing, Norman Blake and Doc Watson. But I never... I appreciated the virtuosity, but I never felt like I sort of culturally related to Southern music as much as I appreciated it. And a lot of the music that I heard of string music was tamburica music, which is a form of traditional music that comes from Croatia and Serbia. And when I heard gypsy music...
my phone went off.
Somebody's phone.
That wasn't supposed to happen. I turned that off.
You know, my phone turns itself back on occasionally when I turn it off.
That wasn't supposed to happen.
I hear you.
I took great measures to turn that off.
No worries.
Anyways, the tamburica music was stuff that I had heard growing up on the Iron Range and coming from partial Croatian ancestry. And then my grandfather played upright bass and played jazz. So when I heard Django Reinhardt's gypsy music, I thought to myself, well, this is a melding of what I really love.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, the string approach was really the most appealing approach to jazz for me. So, but that said, should we play another song?
Yes, I have one quick question, though.
Yes.
When I think of jazz, I often think of improvisation. So how much of what you play at any given time is improvised?
A lot. All of the bass notes that Dad is playing are basically an improvised line. He never plays the same line. I play the melody for the first 32 bars of the tune, maybe, and then I would say probably 80% of it is improvised, you know, and boy, that's a huge subject to get into, improvisation.
I'm sure.
I mean,
we'll hear a song.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a major
subject. I was just curious.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we're going to play a song now. This is a song that's a Chocek, and its title is Maestore, Maestore. And it is a tune that comes from the southern Balkan Peninsula. So this keeps in line with the Balkan theme here. So this is a Macedonian tune titled Maestore.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Was the Clearwater Hot Club. Now, that was a Macedonian tune?
Yeah, it was, yep.
My ancestors are from that, from Greece, and that just kind of brought me back to hearing Greek music as a kid, I suppose.
It's also such
similar.
A European sound. Everything you guys do has got such a strong European sound.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of, I don't know, it's like speaking with an accent, you know, and this was the first music that I really took very seriously, and I kind of can't not make it sound that way anymore. You know, so we bridged the gap. We put Macedonia right between our Croatian and your Greek ancestry there. So
there you go. So you had mentioned, you said that there are bands all over the world that specialize in gypsy jazz and Django Reinhardt music. How is it interpreted differently in different places?
Oh, that's a really good question, actually. This music sort of started taking real popularity on, I would say, about 1999, 2000. And I would say Woody Allen's film, Sweet and Low Down, had a really a large part in that. And most of this music that was being played at the time was being played in Europe by either gypsies or people that were in France or Holland or Germany. But for instance, one of the guys that I worked with, Paul Mayling, was an American out of San Francisco, and I played with him for 3 years, 2 or 3 years. And the way he approaches it is much more from what I would call sort of a traditional American jazz way, because he came from the sort of New Orleans trad jazz style. And so, you know, he focuses more on the repertoire of, you know, say Dinah, a song like Dinah or All of Me. And it was very strongly, that band was very strongly rooted in sort of the American swing tradition. But those Django tunes, that repertoire played on that instrumentation. And I worked in another group called the Robin Nolan Trio, and Robin was a Brit, and he was British, and was highly influenced by rock and roll, British rock and roll, and loved AC/DC. So there is a, you know, there is a really strong rock and roll vibe to his music, which, quite frankly, to play in a band like that was a lot of fun.
I bet.
It was a kick to do those kinds of songs and that kind of feel on these instruments.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, those are just two examples. And then that first tune, Four Sephora, that we played, is, you know, obviously that's not a swing tune and it's not a French sound. That's more of a sort of a gypsy rumba type feel to it, you know. So that comes from more of the sort of Spanish influence from Spanish gypsies, and but it's all over the world now. And you know, you listen to Russian guys playing it, it sounds like Russian music, you know. And but I try and lend sort of I really love Latin music, I love Brazilian music, I love Balkan music. And we were actually up here one time and a guy came up to us and said, "You guys must be Slavs," to Dad and I. And we said, "Well, how do you know that?" And he said, "I can tell by the way you play." And I, wow. I thought, wow, well, that's a really high compliment as far as I was concerned. Like, so, you know, and when you go to countries that have that influence, you'll hear it. But, you know, it's all through the lens of this gypsy jazz training and technique and instrumentation. So
that's so interesting. Little part of the musical world that's so specialized and so wonderful.
It is. It's so wonderful. I mean,
and it's so amazing that it occurs up here.
Yeah.
With these guys, so well, we're such a high level.
We're holding down the fort here in northern Minnesota. I mean, there's all these geographic locations. You know, there's hot clubs in Minneapolis and Madison and Iowa, and so we're holding down the northern end of things here. So
well, and we're glad about that. So, will you play some more?
Of course.
All right.
Play as much as you want us
great.
To.
Great. What's next?
Well, I was mentioning how much I like Latin music, and I am a great fan of Brazilian music, and there's a style of music called choro that was developed along a similar timeline as American jazz, and there's a long story that we can go into about that, but I'll spare you the details here, and we'll just get right into the tune. This is titled Benzinho, a Brazilian choro.
One, two, three. Thank you.
That was wonderful.
Now, does that, what is a choro? What does that mean? A choro?
Yeah, a choro is, it's basically just a song form that comes from Brazil. And I think choro, they also call it chorinho, means to cry, like to cry out. It's music that cries out. And yeah, it like I said, it developed along a similar timeline as American jazz, you know, starting in the 19-teens. And that tune was written by a wonderful composer named Jacob do Bandolim, which means Jacob of the mandolin. So anyone who is a Brazilian who lives up here and heard this, or is a student of traditional choro music, knows that we did not play that traditionally. We put it into sort of the gypsy jazz blender there, as we do with many things.
What does that mean? Does that mean at a higher tempo? Or?
Well, essentially what it means is that music would be played, choro music traditionally would be played actually with a 7-string guitar, which the rhythm guitarist would be playing, and he'd be playing nylon strings, playing it with the fingers versus a pick. And the 7th string would be used to play bass notes and bass runs, while the top strings of the guitar, I mean the higher pitch strings, would be plucked and played chords. And then there'd be also, you know, 6-string guitars. And then the melody is typically played on a mandolin. But they also use flute and clarinet, and they use a little string instrument called a cavaquinho. And then percussion as well. And so that's the traditional Brazilian way. We're playing with picks. So Mike is strumming with a pick. I'm picking with a pick. I'm playing on a guitar. And we have a bass. And Dad always tells me that he always feels that choro music sounds much better when there's an upright bass. In the
of course. Absolutely. No doubt.
I agree.
So, but Jacob do Bandolim. Bandolim means mandolin in Portuguese. And his real name is Jacob Bittencourt. And he was one of the primary composers in the 1940s and 50s of that style of music, and I became aware of his music through other friends that like gypsy jazz, and it was David Grisman that kind of brought the choro music into the American public's ear by re-releasing recordings that were recorded in Brazil in the 1950s. He re-released them in the 80s or 90s on his Dog disc label, so that kind of brought it you know, that music to North America here. So that's a little bit of background on that.
Well, that was going to be one of my next questions was, you mentioned you like, you know, Latin music and Brazilian music. And how do you find it?
You know, a lot of it is just friends. They say, man, have you heard this? I mean, musicians are always doing that. Hey, man, what are you listening to? What's your favorite record these days, you know? And that Brazilian choro music was brought to my attention by a wonderful mandolin player named Joel Walsh, who came out of Duluth and plays in a bluegrass band, or did anyways, called Joy Kills Sorrow, which a lot of people know that band. Very talented mandolin player, and he gave me my first discs of that, and I thought, wow, this is great. But then not trying to drop names here, but I feel quite honored that I've been able to play with mandolinist Peter Ostrushko. And so having played with him, you know, I went through his recordings, learning his material, and you know, he plays this Brazilian choro music as well, so he's introduced me to a lot of the repertoire as well. So, and actually, you can credit Peter Ostrushko really as much as you can David Grisman for bringing that music into prominence. So,
Wow, you always learn something new on the Roadhouse, don't you, Dick?
A multitude of things we've learned tonight. I hope you got this recorded.
Yes, we do.
So I can listen to it again.
We do.
I didn't take notes.
There will be a test next week for both of you.
Well, actually, and next week, we should mention, we are having Emery Lester in, who's a rather renowned bluegrass player. He's playing down at the Lutzen Bluegrass Masters Weekend.
Sure.
And
he's a mandolinist, right?
I mean, I don't know yet, but we're having him and his band
here.
He's
going to be here no matter what he
plays. No matter what he's playing, I'm sure it'll be great. So anyway, well, we'd love to, if we have time, we'd love to hear some more.
Well, let me ask you, Sam, I mean, this is a silly question in a way, but, you know, I've been watching him sit here. He hasn't looked at a piece of music at all.
Right.
And his fingers are flying all over. How many songs do you know?
Don't ask me that question. I'm a professional musician. I know a lot of songs.
That's amazing, actually.
It's interesting when you play as much as we do. The repertoire just keeps expanding, and when you play with other musicians, it expands, and you know, you even forget them as time goes on. So there's a lot in the repertoire that we do. So
great.
So
Let's hear one of those other ones you've memorized.
All right, let's hear one of those other ones. This is Swing Guitars by Django Reinhardt.
1, 2, I want 2, 3, 4.
Wonderful.
Cool piece. You all had a part to play, a very prominent part.
And that was a Django Reinhardt tune.
That was, yeah. That was titled Swing Guitars, which is, you know, rather appropriate since there's two guitars in the room playing swing music. So,
And was that arranged by you, how it was done here? Or
well, yeah, you know, we've been delving a little bit into arranging, and I don't like to over-arrange things too much, but, you know, we do orchestrate a few little hits and riffs there in which we can... do something in unison and give the bass a little bit to step out there. Because, you know, he works really hard. He plays every beat of every song, you know.
Right.
So you got to throw him a bone every now and again, you know.
Plus he's my dad,
and he's the guy who drives, you know, and has the van. So, you know, it's you got to be in good with him. So
absolutely.
To play the bass, first you have to own a bass, which is no small thing.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Both literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And then you have a vehicle. You have to have a vehicle that you can haul it with. So.
Oh, yeah.
Those it's got to be like a minivan, right?
You don't strap it on top, do you?
Not so far.
No.
I tell you what. This time with the Grouse gear, it was pretty tight.
Oh.
Yeah, I had to rely on mirrors to see what was around me, that's for sure.
I suppose no compact cars for you.
But you know, it was when we come from Grand Rapids. I live up north of Grand Rapids, and Sam and Mike live right in the town itself. So I usually pick them up in town. But we go across the Iron Range, and then we take the forest road from 53 across to Silver Bay. Mm-hmm. And if there was a more beautiful day to drive that road on, I don't know about it. Because this time of the year, when you don't have snow, pray God, the shadows on a sunny day are so long, and the colors are so muted, and so they're both sort of mournful and lovely at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like, it's a little like growing older. You know, when you've got a good life and you're older, you appreciate you everything like a little bit more. Yeah. Just as, you know, these beautiful days before the onset of winter. So it was no pain to drive over here.
That's good.
No, that's a beautiful drive. And it's pretty remote out there.
Yeah.
But that's how we like it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why we're here, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, I think we could get at least one more in if you will.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
We haven't done any originals yet.
I was going to ask that.
Yes. So this is actually another tune that's going to be on the record that's coming out.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that quick.
Yeah, yeah. So this is rather neat. We got a grant from the Minnesota State Arts Board for this year to record basically every gig that we played every Wednesday and first Friday at the Grand Rapids VFW.
Nice.
And we recorded every single gig, and we had 10 guests from the state of Minnesota, many of them from the Twin Cities, that came up and played with us. So we just used a single microphone and recorded, and then picked the very best of the best. So we have, let's see, two discs with 13 songs on each disc. Oh. We got a lot of great material, and we captured a lot of great Minnesota jazz. I mean, it's really a special project, and it's not something that gets cut and pasted together in a studio. This is real musicians playing a real gig. You can hear the glasses clinking in the bar. You can hear the bathroom doors squeak every now and again.
Sounds perfect.
It's the real deal. You know, it's to me, it's
no isolation booth, no auto-tune.
Right. Yeah,
it's just what it was.
Just real human beings playing music. So this is going to come out around Christmas time.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so we're quite excited about it.
And how will people buy it?
They can buy it on my website via PayPal, or they can get it on, we'll put it on iTunes.
Okay, and your website is?
SamMiltich.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So,
all right.
This next tune is on it, and this is a tune that I wrote titled Homesick, and I wrote this tune for my great-grandmother on my dad's side, who was a Croatian immigrant who moved to Virginia, Minnesota, from the Adriatic seaside, and I just try and imagine the feeling of going from the Adriatic to, you know, Virginia in January in the mines. And it's also sort of, I guess it's written for her, about her life. And, you know, I think sometimes on the Iron Range, the women's story gets left out, because we hear a lot about the male experience of working in the mines, which was undoubtedly brutal and difficult, and it's well documented. But, you know, I think sometimes the story of the women with 10 children trying to raise them, and then their husband is blacklisted by the mining company, that story gets left out, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to capture some of that feeling in this song. So anyways, it's a song that's kind of dear to me, I guess.
Yeah, you know, one thing about her was she did not learn English. She never learned English. She spoke Croatian with her sister who was there, and with other women in the community who spoke. But she told her children, don't speak Croatian in the house, speak English. I want you to be American. And, you know, it was a tough story. I knew her quite well. And I think this song really says a lot about what her life was like. Thank you.
that was beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And melancholy at the same time.
Yeah, those two can definitely coincide.
Very nice. Yes. And you wrote that one.
That was one that I wrote, yep.
Nice. So what? How much of your sets that you're going to play tonight and tomorrow night will be original?
Well, I think we ought to play La Bossa du Grand Marais, a song that I wrote about Grand Marais.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that'll be in the mix this evening. You know, so I always try and throw at least a couple in a set. We got three sets, so you might get six if you're lucky.
That's good. Now, you mentioned this... your recording project that you have a regular gig on Wednesdays, is it?
Yes.
And the first Friday?
Yes.
At the VFW? So how long have you guys been playing there?
We've been playing there, I think, is it our third or fourth year?
I think we're working on four.
We're working on four. Yeah, and it's been just the best thing for us. It's been musically just so wonderful because it just keeps us in the game, so to speak. You know, you don't have to wait a whole week's worth to get to the next gig, and it's provided a great way to basically rehearse every week, if nothing else. But it's better than rehearsal.
We have a following of kind of regulars who come.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
People from out of town have started to show up, which is great.
And I bet visiting musicians play with you as well.
Indeed, yeah. We've had just a number of wonderful guests, and you know, we take them out fishing and give them the Northern Minnesota experience, and they keep coming back. So we must be doing something right there, but it's been just a wonderful experience, and it's just very down to earth. It's a Northern Minnesota VFW. It's just what you would think it would be, and it's wonderful.
That's terrific. Well, we're so glad you guys could be in here tonight. Thank you so much.
It's our pleasure. It's Anne, thank you so much for having us.
Really, really fun to have you guys.